You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Tuesday, February 14th, 2017. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Marcy Wheeler from the blog EmptyWheel.net. On the resignation of Michael Flynn. Yes, after revelations that the White House knew that Flynn was vulnerable to Russian blackmail, Michael Flynn resigns, and Michael Flynn Jr. returns to Twitter.
Dead.
Meanwhile, last night, Steven Mnuchin, famed foreclosure king, famed fraudulent foreclosure king, confirmed as our Treasury Secretary. Meanwhile, back in the White House, people are wondering who's next. 75% of the way the U.S. has come to the Obama-era clean power plan greenhouse emissions goal. A program which Donald Trump is not just sure to end, but probably to prohibit states from participating in.
Dad, if you do that, then all of a sudden, like, men won't be able to be men anymore.
Boeing workers in South Carolina mount a unionization effort. And speaking of labor, Pudzer on deck for a confirmation hearing on Thursday. New Hampshire, yes, the state, responds to White House aide Stephen Miller, tells him he's nuts. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Well, so best laid plans. We had a slightly different show anticipated for today. And then, of course, last night, I'm determined to go to bed early, and just before, like, you know, like 10:30, a story drops in the Washington Post that the White House, and you recall, the story has been, that came out, I guess, a couple of days ago, that first Michael Flynn lied about his communications with the Russian ambassador, in terms of when he had those communications, how much of those communications. Then story comes out, it's leaked by the intel community that, well, no, we know what communications you had. We actually know what you said because we record calls that go to the Russian ambassador.
Head of intelligence.
Yes.
Strategy. Okay.
And... it actually, Marcy Wheeler, we recorded this interview just about an hour ago. She's going to explain how that works. Why Flynn might not have assumed that they would have listened initially.
They tapped you, Dad. Such a Jew move.
And so then it comes out that despite his denials, Flynn did discuss the U.S. sanctions which had been placed on Russia in the waning days of the Obama administration in December, I believe it was. Flynn had conversations the next day with the ambassador and did talk about the sanctions, despite Michael Flynn's denials that he had talked about those. Then, of course, that put Mike Pence on the hot seat because Mike Pence had come out and vouched for Michael Flynn, saying he did not talk about those things. And now it appears that, and at that point, it appeared that Mike Pence had been lied to. And then last night, this last story, which was the last straw that broke the camel's back, was that the White House had been informed late last month. So at least a couple of weeks ago, that Flynn had conversations with the ambassador about those sanctions. So just to give you a sense of what happens, Sally Yates had apparently told the White House this, I guess it was before the 20th, because James Clapper, who was then who was the director of National Intelligence, and John Brennan, CIA director at the time, also shared Yates's concerns. So all this must have happened closer to a month ago now. And they told the White House. They would have told, at the very least, Donald McGahn, who is the White House counsel. We're going to talk after the Marcy Wheeler interview as to what the White House counsel does with the information that the National Security Advisor has lied, supposedly, right? I mean, that's the story, the narrative that we've been told, has lied to the vice president and then presumably the president. If the White House counsel either maybe sits on that information, maybe just goes down, tells folks in the commissary, or if he reports that to the vice president and the president. So that's where we're at, folks. And of course, yesterday, Kellyanne Conway was out assuring everyone that Michael Flynn is still their guy.
Basic question here. Does the National Security Advisor right now enjoy the full confidence of President Trump?
Yes, General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president, and this is a big week for General Flynn. He's the point of contact for many of these foreign visits. If you look at the official schedule, today we had the Prime Minister of Canada, Justin Trudeau, here, obviously, for bilateral meetings.
Okay, what's important of that clip is, if you want to know what Kellyanne Conway looks like when she's lying through her teeth, that's what she looks like. That's what she sounds like.
Isn't that like a open her mouth at any time sort of thing?
I don't know. There was a calmness to her, right, that we don't necessarily see.
You're saying she gets less frenetic when she's lying.
She just slowly blinked her eyes a couple of times. I don't know. That's the tell. Well, should we watch it again? Should we watch it again? Because
sure. I think that there's a complete fusion. I don't think she knows the difference.
I gotta think that at whatever time that was, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, the president did not have 100% confidence. Maybe it was 96. Maybe it was closer to 55. Maybe 15.
But does the National Security Advisor right now enjoy the full confidence of President Trump?
Yes, General Flynn does enjoy the full confidence of the president. And this is a big week for General Flynn.
It is
the eyes. There was a really significant. You're right.
I think it is useful to be able to isolate it and just sort of exhibit it.
Those like, eyes, that's a pretty radical eye. You know what it just occurred to me? This image of Trump sitting Flynn down in an apprentice scenario and being like, I really like that you're a go-getter, you're aggressive, you're loyal, but you also probably committed espionage, so I'm sorry, you're fired.
He sounded very calm when he delivered that.
That's what he would get very calm when he was on The Apprentice. That was when he was most in his essence.
All right, we're going to get to Marcy Wheeler in just a moment. But, folks, it's Valentine's Day. Are you aware of that?
Fuck.
Michael.
Sorry, I forgot.
Take
I
it
apologize.
Easy.
I got stressed.
Scandalized.
Yeah, Scott, I know. You don't like you. Commissary.
I don't like to hear that. Yeah, save that talk for the commissary.
I have to take her to the commissary.
Well, Michael, it's not too late to save the day.
Thank the Lord.
It's too
this
late.
Is going to make Valentine's Day easy for you. You ready? Couples massage.
Perfect.
Or just, you can actually just provide your Valentine or Valentine's massages at their own homes. I mean, look at this. You could be,
I could be out texting someone else while they're getting massages. Yeah.
Two different Valentines a gift simultaneously. You can send a masseuse, private licensed masseuse from Zeal. Just go to Zeal, Zeel.com, or you can go on Zeal's iPhone or Android app and select from top local licensed and pre-screened massage therapists. You can choose your favorite technique. You can choose the gender preference, time, location for your massage. Zeel will send one of their 8,000 licensed massage therapists with a massage table, music, supplies to give you a 5-star massage. Scheduling, booking, and payment is fast and easy. Even the tip is included 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And a Zeel massage therapist can be at your door as little as an hour. And so, Michael, theoretically, you could get off the show.
And doing it now.
You could actually do it right now.
Literally right now.
Last minute gift. No, don't have to worry about going out and get flowers.
Oh, forget that. I'll be here's me or right now.
You could, Michael, while you're sending your Valentine's gifts, you could also be getting the best massage of your life in your own home with Zeel today.
That sounds good.
To help get started, our listeners can get $25 off their first massage. This is going to be a problem because you're going to get, if you're going to get it for both your Valentine's.
Who gets the discount? Dad!
You can get $25 off your first massage by going to Zeel.com or on the Zeel iPhone or Android app using the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. That's Zeel, spelled like eel, but with a Z in front of it, Zeel.com. And make sure to click add promo code at checkout to use my code MAJORITY. All right.
This makes me realize that if I were a person such as Michael, you could stagger the appointments because it's so convenient to schedule them the day of and know where the other person was whilst being with the
other person. You know what? Very rarely has this show helped yeah. me so much practically. Thanks, guys.
Michael could send a massage therapist to a Valentine's. Take one of the Valentines out for dinner.
Yes.
And then say, oh, I've got to get home early because I gotta do production work for the show.
Yeah.
And then...
Well, I would come up with a more plausible excuse than that.
I was going to say, like, why? What's going on? This is the first time I've ever heard you about having to do anything about the show, Michael.
Oh, right. And, yeah. And, no.
Well,
we have to be
tomorrow's set. A special... we're doing special coverage of Pudzer.
Well, tomorrow I'm hosting.
And tomorrow, Michael.
So it actually is
really
of some relevance.
Prep hard. Yeah. But I've got you an after-dinner massage. And then you can go...
Yeah.
...to dinner. There it is. Boom.
That's great. Thank
you. All right. Let's take a quick break. Yeah. When we come back, Marcy Wheeler. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Marcy Wheeler. She, of course, is the proprietor of the blog EmptyWheel.net. Marcy, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Flynn, he has resigned. What is, we got to figure out what the hell is going on, Marcy.
Well, I mean, I think two things are going on. Because also Casey McFarland resigned. She was the deputy national security advisor, and it's worth keeping that in mind as we discuss what would lead Trump to ask for the resignation of somebody like Flynn. The smaller thing is that in recent days, Trump's massive insecurity had been exposed, doing things like discussing the North Korean missile launch in public at Mar-a-Lago, letting guests at Mar-a-Lago pose with the nuclear football guy, mm-hmm. Still using his Android phone. So, I mean, that's the background. And, you know, it's very clear that Trump was completely out of control. And that may be why both Flynn and McFarland were asked to leave. But the big news, which is what people actually care about, is Flynn had a call with the Russian ambassador.
Wait, let me just ask you, let me just stop you there. So when you say, okay, so Trump is out of control in terms of maintaining security protocols. Who is Flynn the guy who is supposed to say to the president, hey, you have to maintain security protocols? And if so, when you say that's why they had to go, who makes that decision or who is pushing there?
Well, there are security officers who would be the experts that say, Mr. President, you really shouldn't let Mr. Nuclear Football pose for Facebook photos. So there are staffers who do that. But, you know, Flynn would have been in charge of that whole issue from within the White House. And that's where one would expect seriousness to be placed. I imagine that in response to the whole Mar-a-Lago thing, people, whether it was Trump's briefers or what have you, went to Trump and said, this really needs to stop because you're making America less safe, which he was. Mm. So great. You know, if it changes, then maybe, you know, it won't be so easy for Mar-a-Lago guests to understand top national security details.
Okay, so let's get back to the ostensible reason why Flynn is gone. It involves his phone call to the Russian ambassador.
Multiple calls. A couple in particular on December 29th, which was the day after Obama imposed sanctions on Russia. And the gist is, I mean, we haven't seen a transcript of those calls. It is clear that there was nothing actionable. So, in other words, Flynn didn't make promises that Trump would reverse those sanctions. He just sort of, it sounds like he just sort of said, just hold on, things will get better once Trump comes in, which were, again, vague enough not to be charged with anything, but specific enough to really raise concerns among the intelligence community. And then on December 30th, and this is what got the intelligence community to look closely. On December 30th, Trump was like, Putin. Sometimes it's hard to keep these guys straight, Putin and Trump. But Putin was like, no big deal. These sanctions don't bug me at all. I'm not going to retaliate in any way. And that's when the intelligence community said, hey, what's going on? They leaked news of the call to David Ignatius, who, of course, is quite close to the CIA. Mm-hmm. In response, the press kept asking Flynn and Mike Pence, the vice president, questions about what went on in that call. And Flynn basically lied about it, both to the press and to Pence. And that was the issue, was that, and in fact, the Trump administration is now saying it wasn't so much the calls, it's that he lied about it to Pence. I don't know whether, you know, they're telling a story. The real issue is, why did Flynn feel the need to hide that he had assured the Russian ambassador that things would get better going forward? Why couldn't he be honest about it?
Okay, so one question is, why couldn't he be honest? Because what he was doing, because he wasn't, you know, it would be hard to argue as the incoming NSA chief that he was in violation of the Logan Act, particularly if he didn't offer anything other than sort of broad platitudes.
Right, even assuming that you could prosecute somebody for the Logan Act, which really hasn't happened. So, I mean, that's one of the underlying things.
All right, well, here's the other question. Didn't we have reporting last night that preceded the resignation letter that the Department of Justice had informed the White House that this call took place? So in other words, they knew about it for some time, right?
Right. Correct.
So
yes.
Why now?
Yeah.
Why the resignation now? Is it if he lied to Pence, weeks ago, and they knew it, that he was lying, because someone had informed the White House. Why now?
Well, because we all learned about it, right? So the Washington Post Sunday night and then last night had these stories revealing that Flynn had lied to Pence, and that became unsustainable. I think it became a question of airing dirty laundry. And the Yates detail was important, not just Yates, but Clapper and Brennan had also gone to the White House and said, you know, we were worried that, that Flynn has been compromised. And to some degree, I think that given when that information became public, when it became public that Flynn had lied to Pence and the White House had done nothing, then it began to exact a political cost. And the larger questions got asked, which I think still haven't been answered, which is whether Trump knew, whether Trump directed Flynn to give Russia assurances that they didn't need to worry about the sanctions. I mean, those questions are still there.
And so do you have a sense, let me ask you this, in terms of the ability of the U.S. government to have that transcript of Flynn's call with the Russian ambassador, we've been told that it's anybody calls the Russian ambassador, it's going to be wiretapped, supposedly, I guess. Is that the case? Is that appropriate? And B, wasn't there a request from the FISA court in October that supposedly, we don't know whether or not the warrant was granted, but it was ostensibly about communications between three or four people from the Trump administration with foreign nationals? Does that have anything to do with this, do you think?
My guess is no. My guess is, the most recent, and I think the one before, Washington Post story basically says, on December 30th, Putin made that really weird response to the new sanctions, and that led intelligence analysts to go actually read the content of already collected calls between Flynn and Kislyak. I can't say the name right, but and the ambassador. So what happens normally is that these calls all get collected and the intelligence community decides whether or not to read them based on the metadata. And as you already suggested, Mike McFaul, who was ambassador to Russia at the beginning of the Obama administration, has suggested it's actually fairly normal for somebody of that stature to carry on conversations with foreign officials in the lead up, even during a campaign, to just make those ties. So it's likely that the metadata did not raise any concerns. But when analysts on December 30th said, whoa, what's up with Putin? Then they went back and started reading content, including content going back during the campaign. Now, we haven't heard anything about what those conversations during the campaign said. I don't think we'd be getting all of these leaks if they were actionable, if they were proof, for example, that Flynn was talking about the DNC hack, just because I think FBI would have made sure that stuff didn't get leaked if there were something that they could actually charge Flynn for. But I on the FISA order, the details are sketchy, but what the reporting has said was that in June and July, probably in response to the Christopher Steele investigation, the FBI tried to get FISA warrants targeted at four different people. And even there, the reporting is kind of sketchy because part of the question was it targeted at Trump's people or was it targeted at Russians who were in the United States who would otherwise be protected by their presence in the United States? Those weren't granted. June, July, not granted. In October, a FISA warrant was granted, and at least some of the reporting suggests that it was only targeted at one person. So in other words, that the FISA court wouldn't permit the targeting of the other three people, but would permit the targeting of the one. Hmm. But to some degree, what people kind of have missed, which amuses me to no end, is that on January 3rd, so literally 4 days after these calls of concern, the new scrutiny of Flynn's ties, 4 days after that, Loretta Lynch finished signing what are new sharing procedures for
yes.
what's called EO-12333 data. And that's data that's collected overseas. It's data that there's no FISA warrant. It's not required, not even a FISA warrant if you accidentally collect on Americans. And one of the purposes, and basically what it does is it permits the FBI or the DEA or the CIA to go to the NSA and say, hey, can you give us all of your intercepts involving the Russian ambassador? Can you give us all of your intercepts involving, you know, 10 other people named in that dossier? And after January 3rd, under these new rules, they would be able to get that
right
in bulk and access without a warrant. So in other words, since that conversation, the December 29 conversation, the December 30th new questions asked, FBI and CIA have both gotten access to a whole bunch of communications that they otherwise might not have been able to get access to without a warrant. They don't need a warrant to get into that.
Was that weird to you that the Obama administration essentially would unilaterally provide that huge upgrade, if you will, I guess, in terms of what the national security state can do with this information, in terms of sharing it, as they're leaving? I mean, what do you make of that?
Yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, you know, it's kind of, hey, isn't it nifty that it could be used to conduct a counterintelligence investigation into Trump? That's great. But yeah, it's terrifying.
Do you think that's why they did it?
I have no idea. No, they had been talking since last spring publicly, okay, and even before that about doing it. There were a number of other big dragnets. So, for example, until 2013, the DEA collected close to most international call metadata. So they had their own copy of the same kind of dragnet that the NSA has, at say maybe 100 countries that are known to traffic in drugs. And that got shut down to protect some of what NSA was doing. Now the DEA is going to be able to kind of replicate what they had and get more enhanced information. There's another dragnet that AT&T was running that probably was beginning to cause AT&T some problems. There's always this push towards more information sharing, and I'm sure the FBI has, you know, I guarantee you the FBI has been pushing for this sharing. So yeah, so Obama, I think it's a terrible decision, but Obama's been working towards it. Literally, this has been in the works since.
Okay, so it's not. It's
July 2004.
It's more of a question of we're giving the national security state this new power. Where the timing is a function of us not wanting to deal with the politics of it as much as it is, if not more so than it would be. Hey, you guys are going to need this to deal with your new president.
But who knows?
But
who knows? I don't know.
All right. Well, all right. Let me ask you this: do you think Flynn? Does this end with Flynn, or is Flynn? I mean, should we see? Okay, Flynn's gone now. Whoever they bring in next, and this is just sort of the forces that wanted Flynn out, and it seems to me that there was those people even before he ever placed that phone call, but maybe with good reason, frankly. But I mean, do you think it ends with Flynn, or do you think that they start to pull a string here?
Well, there are three questions. One is that FISA order, right? So assuming that FISA order wasn't targeted at Flynn, it was targeted at somebody else, and so that may be a real investigation that the FBI doesn't want to tell us about. The second question is, I think Trump is going to continue to get questions about whether he directed Flynn to make that call. And I think that is a legitimate question. The third one is the question about what's going on with congressional investigations. There are actually five, one each in the intelligence committees, a kind of general one at the Senate Armed Services Committee, general one at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, but they had a hearing earlier this week where this came up repeatedly. So it's definitely in the scope. And then one involving Lindsey Graham and Sheldon Whitehouse in the Senate Judiciary Committee. So there are five investigations. Democrats have been pushing for some time for some kind of either bipartisan independent investigation akin to the Benghazi one, or for an independent 9/11 type investigation. And I get why they're doing that. And I don't blame them, because, you know, after 10 years of Benghazi investigations, it feels like it's good politics. I also think that, particularly given both the statements and the role of Devin Nunes, who's chair of the House Intelligence Committee, and Richard Burr, who's chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, both of them were on Trump's transition team. And both chose not to conduct any hearings on this stuff in August.
I think Nunes said, like, literally 7 hours before Flynn resigned, like, I don't think there's anything there.
Since then, he said, oh, yeah, we're not going to touch on this because of executive privilege. And so I think Democrats are right and should suggest that neither Nunes nor Burr should oversee investigations into this, and whether, you know, they should step down as chair, or whether somebody else should be statutory chair for these investigations, or whether they should be elsewhere. I frankly, and I'm, you know, this is not a popular opinion, but whatever official investigation there is, it needs to A, have access to everything the intelligence community has, and B, remain mostly classified.
Right.
And I say that because there's that FISA order, right? The FBI, people don't trust Jim Comey, and I get that. But I believe there is a real investigation and a multi-part investigation into, there are still lots of questions about the hack that haven't been answered, that should be answered. Not least who it was that took the files from the hack from Russian intelligence and gave them to Julian Assange. And there is abundant reason to believe that person or those people may be Americans. So I want that investigation to go forward, and it's not going to go forward if either somebody like Nunes or Burr can leak the contents of it to Trump and to people close to Trump, or if it happens in public as the White House Graham one would. So, you know, while I'm very supportive of Democratic claims, Democratic calls for some kind of real investigation, I really would caution people to be cognizant of the fact that a big part of this needs to be secret. And frankly, I think that a good amount, I think there is reason to believe that the intelligence community has some reason to be embarrassed about the DNC hack as well. And again, that's not going to happen in public, but I think it's really important.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I think that the way in which it was handled, two details that are really critical. One is an entity called Shadow Brokers, which is presumed to be tied to the DNC hack, started leaking NSA hacking tools, did so in August and again October and again in January. And NSA needs to explain, A, who got their hacking tools,
right?
Why their hacking tools are accessible to somebody presumed to have ties to the Russian intelligence, and also why they were sitting on known vulnerabilities of American firewall companies that therefore have exposed American and international businesses to be hacked. So that's one really important question. And another one, and again, another reason why I really think Democrats need to be cognizant that a big part of this needs to be secret, is that Russia has arrested and charged at least two top FSB, so their CIA, two top FSB intelligence officers on claims of treason, on claims that they were sharing information with the United States. And so if we are having our spy, and then there's another guy who is presumed to have been involved in the dossier, who was killed in kind of creepy Putin-esque circumstances in December. And so for those three reasons, if we're losing spies in Russia because of stuff that's already been made public, the last thing we should be pushing for is for all of it to be made public, because frankly, we want those assets in place. We don't want them being tried for treason or being murdered in their car.
All right. Well, lastly, Marcy, because I know you've got to catch a plane here. I've had an off the wall theory for a while, and I wasn't going to raise it in this context, but it seems on some level that you're suggesting that there's an investigation that's going on that should be protected, that we don't hear much about and we shouldn't hear much about. But I've speculated that perhaps one of the reasons why Comey went public with the material that they were going to investigate in terms of Clinton was because he was engaged in an investigation that he thought could lead to down the road to Trump or the Trump campaign, and presumed at that time that Hillary Clinton was going to be president and that he would have to justify his impartiality, and that this was sort of a preemptive way of indicating that, like, look, I'm going after both of them equally. And he assumed, though, that she would be president, and sometime in spring of 2017, he would maybe have charges against some Trump officials. Is there any possibility to that type of scenario?
Look, no matter what, Comey handled himself improperly in July.
Right.
I mean, there is just no excuse for not just, being as forthcoming about the results of an investigation. I get why he did that. But then going and testifying to Congress, completely inappropriate, pretty unprecedented. And I think he did that because Jim Comey is self-righteous and believes, you know, he's above reproach and yada, yada. However, it's also important for people to remember that Hillary investigation, A, was public. B, you know, Congress knew about it before anybody else knew about it. It came from a public referral. There was a public IG report. Hillary was talking about it somewhat publicly. There were FOIAs everywhere. So it was public. And it also was about events in the past, right? I mean, the events, no one cared about what happened after 2013 there. And so it was an investigation about events that were done, that were, you know, already in the past. Whereas even here with Flynn, right, we know that after questions were raised, after Russia was blamed twice, Flynn continued to have conversations that at least the IC considered problematic. And that's worth people remembering, which is that if there are, you know, whether it's, say Roger Stone, who's one of the people who was named in the dossier, or anyone else like that. If there are people who are still spying for Russia, right? That's what we're talking about. If there are people with close ties to Trump that are still spying for Russia, that's ongoing.
Right.
And so we can't say it's safe to talk about it because the events are in the past, because they're not in the past, right? And there's still the possibility that our spies in Russia could be killed, or that Russia will learn about the investigation. And so so even though what Comey did, you know, whether there's a good excuse for it or not, what Comey did was inexcusable, I agree. Your explanation may well be plausible, but at the very least, we know that this is an investigation about ongoing compromise, potential compromise. I mean, no one's been charged yet.
Right.
We do know there was a hack. We do know there are real questions about particular roles in the hack that have never been answered. So that's an investigation into ongoing compromise of the U.S. government, of the Trump administration. And for that reason, I think, regardless of what you think of Jim Comey, it's different. And people need to remember that it's different. And if they don't treat it as different, more people could get killed.
Marcy Wheeler, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Sam.
All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half of the program, a little house cleaning. We are going to be doing our first ever, at least since the iteration of this majority report. Although I guess we've done a couple of off-site live shows, but that was a mobile rig down in Zuccotti Park back during the Occupy days. But this is the first time that we're going to be doing it in a controlled location. That was actually pretty crazy. I can't believe we were able to do that. That was...
Let's do that again.
Well, I mean, whatever. I mean, I don't know where we would do that. We'd go to like a
at a protest.
Oh yeah, a protest would be good.
Yeah.
I mean, the Occupy was actually great because there was a lot of people there to interview. Like in a protest, I'm going to interview the same protesters over and over again. I'm going to be walking around. It's going to be tricky. But all right, be that as it may, that's not the point. The point of this is that on Saturday, April 8th, the year 2017, the Majority Report will be live as part of the New York Podfest at, well, the show starts at 1:30 p.m. Doors open at 1 p.m. Our guests, as of today, Janine Garofalo, Matt Taibbi, will be joining us, yes, live, in the flesh.
Dad.
Michael Flynn Jr., I don't know, possible. He could end up showing up, I think,
would
at this point.
Would not be surprising.
If you want tickets, go to thebellhouseny.com. That's thebellhouseny.com. The Bell House, of course, is in Brooklyn. Is that Gowanus or Carroll Gardens over there?
Bell House? No.
Gowanus. It's over, it's between, I think, 3rd and 4th, like around 9th Street, somewhere around there. 8th Street, 7th Street. I can't remember.
By the commissary.
It's right by the commissary. go to the bellhouseny.com. It's in Brooklyn. It's on a Saturday afternoon, which is always the best time to see a live. It's actually the closest time to, like, it would feel like a normal day almost, except for it was a Saturday.
Wow.
Sam did an appearance on somebody else's show last year, and the Podfest is really cool, and we're on a double bill, and it's
don't oversell it.
What is the other show?
I'm not even overselling
it. What is the other show?
The other show is, hold on.
Wait, is it Risk? No.
What?
Oh, with no. Kevin Allison?
No. I think, no.
That's a good show.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Okay. Which Matt apparently is.
With Mike Flynn Jr.
Wow.
Mike Flynn Jr.?
No, but it's cool. Show.
Oh, and my God. Was I supposed to go do a radio thing with them the other day? When's that supposed to happen?
They wouldn't
be doing the promo now, right? That's what it is. Stuff You're Supposed to Know? Is that what it is?
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know.
Oh, I don't know what that is. I've never heard of that.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
but it sounds interesting. It sounds interesting. I mean,
I think there's a reason that they
who's
probably...
Who's they?
Grouped.
Who's they?
You know, like they. Like the they in Matt's mind.
We know who they are.
Right.
Well, Matt does. But now, like, the they is shifting. I mean, that's what's weird about this whole Flynn thing.
Oh, my God. Is because
no, this is one of those instances where you have basically two groups of people that I don't want to really root for either one. I don't, you know, I'm not necessarily a big fan of the CIA or the FBI. And I'm also not a fan of Michael Flynn.
And you know who else might be celebrating this morning that you're not a fan of? Could be the Bannon and Flynn had their own dynamic. That's another weird sort of, because I think that the congressional Republicans also wanted Flynn out, and Bannon's been trying to make nice with them.
Maybe.
I mean, it's weird. I mean obviously it's primarily say FBI, but yeah, I take your point about not having anyone to root for.
I mean I don't get the sense that Bannon necessarily would necessarily do what the Republicans in Congress want him to do, as opposed to saying, like, you know, it's not up to me.
If it's expedient.
If it's not up to me.
Hates Flynn. Yeah.
But now there's going to have to be more. I mean, if so, this was done very messily, because there's still one major thread hanging out there that is impossible for people not to pull at. In fact, I think just moments ago, the Senate's second ranking Republican and other Republican senators are calling for an investigation. Senator John Cornyn told reporters Tuesday that the Senate standing committees with oversight of intelligence need to investigate Flynn. Senator Roy Blunt said he wanted to speak with Flynn. Now, the problem is, for the Republicans, if your scenario is correct, and even if it's not, you can investigate Flynn,
Where does it stop?
But in, we now know that prior to January 20th, and subsequent to January 20th, by a couple of days, Sally Yates from the DOJ, Brennan from the CIA, and Clapper told, at the very least, Don McGahn, the White House lawyer. So somebody's going to want to know, like, what did you do with that information? Right? I mean, if Don McGahn is not fired, that means that the president and the vice president had no problem with him not informing them that Michael Flynn had lied to Mike Pence. Or they just, I mean, that seems very hard to believe. I think if I had an attorney and someone came to them and said, are you aware that Michael is stealing toilet paper? And he's stealing toilet paper out of the office. And I said to Michael, are you stealing toilet paper? And he said no to me. And then I found out that my show counsel, my attorney, had gotten information from maybe, you know, Andre, who works in the building, that Michael's
Does
been
Andre
leaving.
Still work here?
I don't know what's going weeks. On. But Michael's been leaving the building with reams of toilet paper. I will fire that lawyer for not telling me.
It's so funny because there's only one person in this office who has toilet paper theft on their record.
Not me.
Oh, really?
No, you're thinking of Janine.
Oh, I am thinking. You're right. I thought you were settling the score at Air America.
It's totally off the record. If Sam says it, that doesn't mean it's true. Prove it.
Right. All right. So fair enough. But that's a major thread that's just hanging out there. So
major.
And here, in fact, is Lindsey Graham still pulling at that thread. Here it is. This is the question that's hanging out there. Michael Flynn did this. You can argue that it was not directed by Donald Trump or Mike Pence in the White House for him to call this ambassador and talk about the sanctions. But the question still remains. The White House counsel has known about this for at least 3 weeks, in some instance, 4 weeks. Did they tell the president and the vice president? And if they did, why are they firing him now?
I don't know what we're talking about. What did General Flynn say to the Russian ambassador about lifting sanctions? Did he say anything at all, or is this just being spun by the media? So I think Congress needs to be informed of what actually General Flynn said to the Russian ambassador about lifting sanctions. And I want to know, did General Flynn do this by himself, or was directed by somebody to do it?
Well, and that is an important question. Do you believe at this point, Senator, that Flynn misled the White House, or do you think that he was authorized to talk sanctions with Russia before President Trump took office?
I'd have a hard time believing that General Flynn would get on the phone with the Russian ambassador and suggest that, don't worry, we will revisit this when we get to be president in terms of executive sanctions, without some understanding that the administration be sympathetic to the idea. Now, I may be wrong. Maybe he did this in a rogue fashion. Maybe General Flynn went rogue, but that's
you know
the question
him. Do you think
I
he
need
could've?
To know more. I don't know. He's a pretty strong-willed fella, but I think most Americans have a right to know whether or not this was a General Flynn rogue maneuver, or was he basically speaking for somebody else in the White House?
Well,
there you go.
It's interesting the way he's calibrating that. Yeah, it's so interesting. He's just like, well, let me kind of crack this door, but I could certainly step back from that still. That's very illustrative.
If they're on a few, like, hit the media a little bit.
Yeah. That's very illustrative. It's almost like the first step when you're not just saying it behind closed doors anymore.
They're going to just walk this. They're going to slow walk this stuff. I mean, part of this is, you know, this is going to be leverage for the Republicans in Congress over the Bush administration. I mean, over the Trump administration, I should say. So it's not necessarily that they want to get to the bottom of this. On one hand, you know, as Marcy Wheeler said, if this stuff becomes, ends up entering into the realm of these investigations, it may screw up any real investigation James Comey has. Alternatively, this could be, you know, Republicans in the Senate and maybe ultimately in the House who feel like they can't control the White House. Maybe this is their leash. Who knows? But we're going to take a break, head into the fun half, wherein we're going to...
really absurd.
We're going to make fun of some of Donald Trump's spokespeople and talk more about this. And
utterly ludicrous, really. Michael Flynn.
Other sundry topics. All right, going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920. If you want to help support this program, become a member. Go to jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your membership that makes this show possible. Represents 93.7% of our revenue. I have no idea. I'm making that up.
Backbone of the Majority Report.
It's the backbone of the Majority Report. Be right back.